So I want to thank Joanne for taking the responsibility of rescheduling this, I guess, at a more convenient time. So what I wanted to discuss briefly today is a question that everybody has to deal with as we study Sefer Bereishit, which has to do with how we relate to certain episodes in the text involving the Avot and the Imahot, which read simply and understood simply certainly convey failings, both large and small. So one approach, as I think everybody here is aware, is to try to, and this is reflected in sources in the Gemara and Chazal, where anybody who says that so-and-so sinned, even if it seems completely obvious that there was a sin, Eino Ela Toa. There's a famous Gemara in Masechta Shabbos that says that about David HaMelech, and it says it about Shlomo, and it says it about Reuven, and various figures, where it would seem almost impossible to understand the simple meaning of the Chumash without recognizing that there was a sin. I think all the way at the other end of the spectrum, and this is something we really shouldn't have any truck with, is a kind of an approach which basically looks at these people like just like regular people that don't in any way distinguish themselves. So I think that the tradition that I was raised with, that I try to impart to our students here, is something between these kinds of extremes, which is to say that these were truly great individuals in so many respects, and it's not an accident that they have the status of Avot and Imahot, and yet even the greatest of individuals, because no human being is God, as the Pasuk says in Koheles, Ki Adam Asherin Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Yasa Tov V'lo Yechta, there's nobody who's perfect, besides God himself, Hatzur Tamim Polo, Ki Chol D'Rachav Mishpat El Emunah V'ein Avel Tzadik V'yashar Hu, we're not God. And therefore, even the greatest of human beings can err, and it's really from those errors that we can learn the most. And this is an approach that certainly has its roots in other passages in Chazal, besides the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat that I started off by quoting. So I wanted to take a case in point to try to illustrate this. This is always the view of the Ramban. The Nachmanides may have been the greatest commentary that we have in the Chumash. He lived from 1194 to 1270. He was the leader of the Jewish community in Spain, a very challenging time for the Jewish community in Spain, in Christian Spain. He represented the Jewish community in the famous disputation in Barcelona. Again, that was a losing proposition. The Ramban probably won on the merits, but still his reward was that he was exiled from Spain, which enabled him to fulfill a lifelong dream of making Aliyah. The Ramban details for us just what a horrific state the Jewish community in Israel was in. He had trouble getting a minyan together, and he only lived for a few years in Israel, but the Ramban, one of the great themes, as we've discussed in past years, of his approach to Sefer Bereishit is the centrality of the land of Israel. Just to give one very brief example, the Ramban takes the view, there's this big debate in the Chazal, whether or not the Avot and the Imahot kept the Torah, which seems a little bit funny on its face. After all, the Torah was only given at the midpoint of Sefer Shemot and Parshat Yitro. But be that as it may, there's a very strong rabbinic tradition that the Avot and the Imahot kept the Torah, but the Ramban kind of adopts a middle view, which is that they had to keep the Torah in the land of Israel, but not outside the land of Israel. Which is just one of many indications in the Ramban, the special status of the land of Israel. So in this week's parsha, I wanted to choose one example from Abraham and then one example from Sarah, and then to develop the theme out a little bit as time permits. So we're told, of course, that Avram demonstrated a remarkable faith. Sometimes it's easy to overlook this. It was the first pasuk I ever learned in a formal setting about Chumash, Lecha Chami Eretzecha Miladetcha Mibeit Avicha, El Haaretz Asher Areka. So this is, of course, the beginning of our national story. And Avram is being told to go from the known, Artzecha, Moladetcha, Mibeit Avicha. And if you're asking somebody to give up something that they know, so you owe it to them to say, okay, I'm asking you to leave place X, but here's where you're going. But instead, God tells Avram at the time, not where he's going, but El Haaretz Asher Areka, some place that I'm going to show you. So certainly, Avram gets a great deal of credit for the emunah, right? It's just very simple, but we shouldn't overlook this lesson that he's willing to go and leave everything that he knows to a place that he knows absolutely nothing about, El Haaretz Asher Areka. But no sooner does that happen than the Torah tells us, Vayihi Ra'av Ba'aretz, Vayered Avram Mitzrayma, Lagur Sham ki chaved harav baaretz, that there was a famine, and Avram went down to Egypt. So one way of looking at this, and this is certainly an acceptable approach, a valid approach, is to say, you know, Avram didn't have any divine guidance that he had to stay in Israel at all costs, right? There's a critical section of the Chumash later on in Sefer Bereishit when Yitzchak is getting ready to leave the land of Israel and God says, you're not allowed to leave. It has this captures a certain aspect of Yitzchak's persona. But God didn't tell Avram not to leave. So one way of looking at this is, you know, the truth is that Avram was just doing this to save his family. Now, that kind of an approach doesn't withstand a great degree of scrutiny because, you know, when Avram tells his wife, at the time called Sarai, that she should lie about who she is, that she should say that she's his sister, he says something which is a little incriminating, which would already cast a little bit of doubt on this idea that Avram was fully justified in this action. He says, Leman yitavli bavurech v'chaita nafshi biglalech. So v'chaita nafshi means I'll survive so that they won't kill me. Okay, so that seems defensible. But leman yitavli, right, you'll say that you're my sister so that they don't believe that you're a married woman. So that sounds like Avram is trying to benefit. And the Ramban was extremely critical of Avram, or as we would say Avraham Avinu, for this. And he says, Melamed shachata Avram Avinu chet gadol. And then he adds in the words, bishkaga. No, it wasn't that he was doing this bimezin, meaning, you know, with malice or with intent, but the Ramban notes that Avram sinned severely in this instance in two respects. First of all, by exposing his wife to this kind of danger. Obviously, a miracle happened, and she wasn't assaulted by Paro, who tried to take advantage of her. So God intervened. That's number one. So he exposed his wife to terrible danger. And number two, right, just think about it from her point of view, right? This was not to her advantage to be his sister. It wasn't Lema'an Yitav La Bavuro, right? It was Lema'an Yitav Li Bavurech. That's number one. And number two, the Ramban says, leaving the land of Israel was a terrible sin and a failure of exactly the same faith that we reflected on just a moment ago, El Ha'aretz Asher Areka.
What is sinful about leaving the land of Israel?
A lack of faith that God would provide for him.
Oh, because of the...
He was told to go there, he wasn't told to leave, yeah.
Yeah, because he was...
Okay. So that was considered a chet gadol. And the Ramban goes so far as to say that this was the reason that Avram is then told a few chapters later. This is in chapter 12. Avram is told in chapter 15, Yadoa teda ki ger yezer achav eretz lelahem vavadum vinu otam arba meot shana, that the Jewish people will be enslaved and tortured and tormented for hundreds of years in a foreign land. So the Ramban says it's all on account of what Avram did, that there would be a famine and go down to the land of Egypt. This is exactly what happened to the Jewish people. And he sort of, right, he said that he wanted to be able to prosper, and what ended up happening is that the Egyptians took his wife, and the Ramban says that becomes a template for what happens in the beginning of Sefer Shemot, where they say, Kol haben hayilota yorot hashichu v'chol habat hachayun. Obviously, the Egyptian plan was to get rid of the men, to take the women. What ends up happening in the story of Avram, Vayinaga Hashem et Paro negayim gdolim et beto, that God punishes Paro, what happens later on, the Eser Makot, which are, by the way, described as negayim, Makat Bechorot is called by the Torah, Od nega achad avi al paro v'amitraim. It's exactly the same word. And what happened to Avram after he left Egypt? It says v'Avram kaved meod ba mikneva ba karu v'atzon. He left with a great deal of wealth. What happened to the Jewish people, to Am Yisrael? V'achreichen yitzu b'ruchush gadol. So the Ramban says this whole paradigm was created by Avram, including the fact that the Jewish people would have to be punished specifically in the land of Egypt. So here we have, again, a classical example of no less an authority than the Ramban, saying that Avram Avinu was guilty of a very severe sin, but really two sins, insofar as he exposed his wife to very significant danger and essentially put her in a position where only a miracle could have spared her a terrible and vicious assault on the part of Paro. That's the first half of the story. Now, the second half of the story is that Sarai commits a very significant sin, and the Ramban's telling later on in the parsha. Anybody happen to remember what you might say is a very significant sin on her part? Okay, so in next week's parsha, she does that, and it does seem that Hashem is critical of her for that. Not critical of Avraham, who laughed in this week's parsha, which is a big question. Why didn't Avram get in trouble for it? So Unkelos says it was a different kind of laughter. Yeah. Right. So we know that the story is, we're not pointing, you know, fingers ourselves here, but Sarai was Akara. The first thing we learn about Sarai is that she's Akara. Torah says, Vati Sarai Akara Ein Lavalad, which seems repetitive or redundant, but the Torah seems to be really stressing the point. And in the parsha that we read this past Shabbat, she comes to her husband, and she says, Hinena Tzarani Hashem Iladet, that it's not working out for me. Bonal Shifchati, and she is willing to give Hagar over. Ulai Banemi Mena, that we're going to build the family out that way. Okay. And indeed, Hagar does become pregnant. It's really interesting that if you read the psukim very carefully, it sounds like Avram at the time did not immediately act on Sarai's suggestion. It just says, Vaishma Avram l'kol Sarai. And then the next pasuk says that Sarai took Hagar and basically pushed her into the tent of Avram, meaning that he was, you know, skeptical of the whole arrangement to begin. It wasn't his idea. Anyway, she gets really angry at Avram and says that it's all his fault. Chamasi alecha, Hashem yishpot b'ni uveinecha. I'm not entirely sure why she's so angry at him. There are different theories about that. But be that as it may, the Torah says that Hagar may have reacted to a certain degree dismissively towards Sarai. It says, Vatekal gvirta bena, doesn't specify any particular examples. And the response from Sarai is unrelenting. The Torah says, Vateaneha Sarai. That language of Inui is exactly actually what the Jewish people experienced at the hands of the Egyptians. We just quoted the same language, Vavadum v'inuotam. Remember at the beginning of Sefer Shemot, when the Jewish people are enslaved, V'chasher yi'anuoto ken yirbe v'chein yifrots. So the Ramban says, Chata imenu, that Sarah had a very serious sin here, that this was not appropriate for her to react this way. Whatever Hagar did, but to cause her this degree of pain and affliction was very inappropriate. And again, the Ramban, l'shitato, exactly as he said it was the case with Avram, and how that cause there was related to Shibud Mitzrayim. So the Ramban comes back and says, and therefore the result is the birth of Yishmael, the Torah says will be a para adam, yadova kov yad kolbo, and the Ramban says that the punishment for Sarai was that her descendants would have a lot of trouble with the Bnei Yishmael throughout the Dorot. In other words, these are not just small sins that would, you know, go away, but that would be perpetuated for all of history based on this doctrine of Maase Avot Siman Lebanim. So again, it's very important to recognize that, you know, there's a middle ground between, you know, making the claim that the Avot and the Imahot were absolutely perfect and saying they were just, you know, regular people like us, and that is the Derech of the Ramban. And these are classical examples. The Ramban says Avram and Sarai at the time, or Avraham and Sarah, both failed in very, very significant ways, and those failures had profound consequences for the Jewish people. In the case of Avraham, Shibud Mitzrayim. In the case of Sarai, or Sarah, the difficulties that the Jewish people were destined to have with Bnei Ishmael. Remember, it's even more impressive for the Ramban to be writing about that, because let's recall, he lived not in Muslim Spain, but in Christian Spain, and he says this is all ordained, that there will be ongoing problems in that regard. Okay, so I just wanted to now take a little bit of a 45-degree turn after having established that point, because we'll be using it throughout our study of Sefer Bereishit, that there's what to be learned from the shortcomings of the greatest people in our tradition. Even the greatest of people can make mistakes. I wanted to turn to a Gemara in Masechta Nedarim that raises the question to which the Ramban implicitly was responding to, is why exactly were we sentenced to such a grievous and serious extended period of time in slavery in the land of Egypt. You know, Avram is told, Yadoa tida ki ger yezer achar beretz l'olam v'avadum v'inu otam arba meot shana. So what exactly did Avram do wrong by that stage? So again, according to the Ramban, the answer is Vahi Ra'av Ba'aretz, exposing his wife to that kind of danger and abandoning the land of Israel. But that's not clear from the text. Again, like I said, you could have defended the idea of leaving the land of Israel for him to save his family. After all, not two generations later, Yaakov runs away from the land of Israel to save himself from Esav, who's planning on killing him. We know that Esau was planning on killing him, not because of any medrash, but because the Torah says.
And then Yaakov does it with Yosef.
Yeah, it's not. It happens again and again. Yikrevu yimei evel aviv argat Yaakov achi. So you could have defended it. The Ramban didn't defend it, and the Ramban really goes to town with it. But the Gemara Nedarim suggests three different answers, two of which I wanted to deal with quickly, and one of which I just wanted to spend like 3-4 minutes on as we conclude. So the first answer suggested by the Gemara, and it's dealt with by the greatest of the Amoraim, Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, or Rabbi Eliezer Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, three of the greatest Amoraim, all related to this question. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yochanan lived in the land of Israel. Shmuel lived in Babel. He left Israel and went to Babel and opened up the second yeshiva in Babel. The first one was opened by Rav and Sura. Shmuel opened up the second one in Nahardaa. So they have three different answers. So the first answer, which is suggested, is based on something that happened in last week's parsha, but nothing to do with going down to Egypt. Then we know that Avram performed the first mitzvah recorded in the Torah of Pidyon Shvuyim, that even though Lot abandoned him, Avram was always going to be there for Lot. Vayishma Avram ki nishba achiv. Lot is, after all, still his brother, technically his nephew, but he always calls him his brother. Anashim achim anachnu. And the Torah says, Vayarek eschanichav yilidei veso, shmona asaru shlosh meot, vayirdof adan. That Avram takes his 318 disciples, Vayarek et chanichav, and he goes to save Lot. So that sounds like a big mitzvah to us. It's a mitzvah of pikuach nefesh. The Rambam says that the highest level of tzedakah isn't only getting somebody a job or giving them a loan, but the greatest mitzvah of tzedakah is pidyon shvuyim. That's when you can use your money actually save a life. He says any situation of pidyon shvuyim is really a case of sakanat nefashot. That's the Rambam in Hilchot Matanot Aniyim Perek Chet. So the Rambam says that over there, and he says a person who doesn't participate in the mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim is in violation of many lavin, including lo tamod al dam reyacha. So the Rambam, you should just know, considers the mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim to be a matter of saving a life. That's why if a situation comes up on Shabbos, you never stop. Whatever it is, pikuach nefesh is docha et kol haTorah kula. So anyway, that's a simple reading. The Gemara says something a little shocking, which I admit is not a big part of my ideology or any part of my ideology at all. So the first answer the Gemara gives is that Avram was wrong to interrupt the studies, the Torah study of the 318 members of his household, lasos angaria b'talmidei chachamim. So again, if you subscribe to an ideology which rejects military service in defense of the Jewish people, that's a good line of the Gemara for you to know. I think it's outweighed by about 1,000 other lines in the Gemara, but we have a rich tradition, and I wasn't going to skip over that just because it would be more convenient for me. That's one answer in the Gemara.
Whose answer is that?
That is the answer, if I remember correctly, of Rabbi Elazar. Okay. Then Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan weigh in on the topic. Shmuel says that it was a sin of doubt, basically, that Avram was calling card, it was Emunah, right? Asar nisyonot nisnasa Avram Avinu. So when Avram said the words, Bamei eda ki yirashena, how will I know that I will inherit? God, you keep on telling me, Lazaracha atena da aretz azot, I don't see any zera here. Uven meshek beitiu da mesek eliezer. So Avram's doubt in God was the problem. Okay, so that's another approach that he shouldn't have doubted. So the approach that I think is most fascinating, again, I'm not sure how much it's the pshat, because I don't know that you have to really buy into the supposition of the question, which is that it was an onus, that it was a punishment. It could have just been a necessary part of the development of the Jewish people, which is what I personally believed. And the Ramban obviously thought it was a punishment, and that's why he goes to Vayira of Baretz. But there's a third answer that I think is a great bridge between this week's Parsha and last week's Parsha, and I wanted to conclude on this point, because I think it's just really something very provocative to think about. We know in this week's Parsha, when one of the great moments in his career, Avraham, with great audacity, challenges God in this great debate, Chalilalach me'asot kadavar hazeh, God is going to destroy Sodom, Amorah, Matzoyim, and Zoar. God is going to destroy the five towns. Not these five towns, the other five towns. So Avram says, you can't do it. There could be some tzaddikim there. So he says, Chalilalach would be a desecration. Hashofet kol haaretz lo ya'aseh mishpat. So this is an amazing thing because, you know, after all, the people who live in Sodom and Amorah are ra'im v'chata'im la'ashem ma'od. They're the, you know, spiritual nemeses of Avraham Avinu, clearly. And yet he's praying for them and he's demanding that God abide by a standard of justice. And there's a lot to be said for that. But this Gemara kind of turns that interaction on its head by saying that, you know, way back in Parshas Lech Lecha, what we just read, the king of Sodom comes with his tail between his legs after the war, and Avram had rescued the entire population of Sodom as well as all the wealth of Sodom. So he comes to Avram and he says, let's make a deal. Tein li ha-nefesh v'arechush kach lach. Right, money is everything in Sodom, as we know. So he thinks he's offering Avram this great deal. You're going to get rich. And of course, Avram's response is, you think I want your money? You know, you think I want to be tainted by that? God forbid, right? So Avram comes out the hero. Except according to this Gemara, he's not so much the hero, because he gave the nefesh back. And the Gemara says that it was incumbent upon Avram, after he had possession of these people, to hand them back over to the king of Sodom. It was like signing their death warrant. These people were so corrupted by the society in which they lived. And if Avram's raison d'etre, his whole mission in life, was to bring people into, you know, some sense of morality, whether or not he was able to convince them, you know, of the unity of God's existence, lachnisam tachas kanfei ashchina, to quote the Gemara's actual language, but to give them a sense of morality. And Avram was very successful. At the end of his career in Parshas Chayisera, when he's dealing with the Bnei Ches, they refer to him as Nisi Elokim atah b'tochenu. They see him as a great ambassador of God. So, and yet, you know, Avram misses this opportunity. So the third answer in the Gemara in Masechta Nedarim, if I remember correctly, the answer of Rabbi Yochanan, is that it was a terribly missed opportunity, and the blood of all of those people in Sodom was at least in part on the hands of Avram Avinu. So his intervention in this week's parsha was because, you know, he was responsible for their well-being. After all, he had an opportunity to really influence them, to bring them into his household, and he sent them back to Sodom. So that is actually a very provocative point of view. And according to Rabbi Yochanan then, the reason that Avram's descendants would be punished so severely is that there wasn't a failure in terms of a sin of commission, that Avram did something wrong. He left Israel. He didn't believe in God. He, you know, abused Talmidei Chachamim in terms of, you know, enlisting them in this particular mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim, but it was a sin of omission, essentially, that he missed an opportunity, and he missed an opportunity for which he was uniquely suited. And that I think is not the pshat. It would be hard for me to defend it as a pshat, but it's a very provocative idea. And what it reminds us of is the imperative that we all have, that when we are in a position of influence, to try to use that influence well. The Gemara Masechta Shabbos says that a person who's in a position to influence his household and fails to do so, nitpas al anche beso. So he's responsible for the sins of everybody's household. Anche iro, nitpas al anche iro. If you can influence your city, kol olam kulo, nitpas al kol olam kulo. The whole world, we're essentially held accountable, not so much for what we do or what we don't do, but what we could have done. Now, this is something my Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal would always emphasize to us. Actually, they just recently transcribed the final shiur he ever gave when he was very sick, and he came back to this exact theme, that a person has to measure himself or herself not so much by what they did or their particular failures. I did this mitzvah, or I did this avera, but in a much more holistic sense, did I achieve what I could have achieved? Did I have the impact that I could have had? In the broadest sense of the term. So what this Gemara is basically saying is that Avram could have had a much broader impact than he really did. And the destruction of Sodom and Amorah is an indictment of him for passing up the opportunity to have that impact. And indeed, the Yerushalmi, to conclude with this line of the Yerushalmi in Masech Kiddushin, cited by the Ramban on the Pasuk in Parshas Kisavo, the Torah says, Arur asher lo yakim es divrei HaTorah zos lasos osam. So that's an unusual language, asher lo yakim. What does it mean to lift up the Torah? So the Ramban quotes from the Yerushalmi, it says, Milamed mishalamad vilimed vishamar v'asa, a person who learned and he taught, and he guarded the Torah, and he kept it. Velokie, meaning he wasn't interested, he wasn't motivated to promote values in society, to have a broader impact. Hareza bichlal arur, this person is cursed. And then the Yerushalmi says, Mishalo lamad, a person who's not learned. Velo limed, velo shamar, velo asa, avalkiim, but he was oriented to try to strengthen, even though personally he had massive flaws, gaping holes in his, you know, spiritual persona. Hareza bichlal baruch, that person is amongst the blessed. So again, you know, this idea of trying to have the broadest impact we possibly can is certainly an imperative which emerges from this one view, the view of Rabbi Yochanan, why was it that the descendants of Avraham Avinu were punished so severely? What was his failure? His failure was not having the impact that he might have had, in particular with respect to the people of Sodom and Amorah. So again, thanks so much, Marita, for sponsoring Just Because. The nicest sponsorship we ever got. And we'll pick it up there, God willing, next week in this new time.
Thank you. Is that so clear? This is the permanent new